The third stop on the roadmap of failure is the most frequent, the most surprising, and assumes a wide variety of forms. It turns out that societies often fail even to attempt to solve a problem once it has been perceived. Many of the reasons for such failure fall under the heading of what social scientists term rational behavior, arising from clashes of interest between people. That is, some people may reason correctly that they can advance their own interests by behavior harmful to other people. Scientists term such behavior rational, precisely because it employs correct reasoning, even though it may be morally reprehensible. The perpetrators know that they will often get away with their bad behavior, especially if there's no law against it or if the law isn't effectively enforced. They feel safe, because the perpetrators are typically few in number and highly motivated by the prospect of reaping big, certain, and immediate profits, while the losses are spread over large numbers of individuals. That gives the losers little motivation to go to the hassle of fighting back, because each loser loses only a little and would receive only small, uncertain, distant profits from successfully undoing the minority's grab. Examples include so-called perverse subsidies, the large sums of money that governments pay to support industries that might be uneconomic without the subsidies, such as sugar growing in the U.S. The relatively few growers lobby tenaciously for the subsidies that represent much of their income, while the losers, all the taxpayers, are less vocal because the subsidy is funded by just a small amount of money conceded in each citizen's tax bill. Measures benefiting a small minority at the expense of a large majority are especially likely to arise in certain types of democracies that bestow swing power on some small groups, for example, senators from small states in the U.S. Senate. A frequent type of rational bad behavior is good for me, bad for you, and for everybody else. An example is that until 1971, mining companies in Montana, on closing down a mine, just left it with its copper, arsenic, and acid leaking out into rivers because the state had no law requiring companies to clean up after mine closure. In 1971, the state of Montana did pass such a law, but companies discovered that they could extract the valuable ore and then just declare bankruptcy before going to the expense of cleaning up. The result has been about $500 million of cleanup costs to be borne by the citizens of Montana and the U.S. One particular form of clashes of interest has become well known under the name Tragedy of the Commons. Consider a situation in which many consumers are harvesting a communally owned resource, such as fishermen catching fish in an area of ocean, or herders grazing their sheep on a communal pasture. If everybody overharvests the resource, it will become depleted and thus decline or even disappear, and all of the consumers will suffer. It would therefore be in the common interests of all consumers to exercise restraint and not overharvest. But as long as there is no effective regulation, then each consumer would be correct to reason, if I don't catch that fish or let my sheep graze that grass, some other fisherman or herder will anyway, so it makes no sense for me to refrain. The correct rational behavior is then to harvest before the next consumer can, even though the eventual result may be the destruction of the commons. One obvious solution is for the government or some other outside force to step in. However, that is impractical in some situations, such as the open ocean, and involves excessive administrative and policing costs in other situations. A second solution is to privatize the resource, dividing it into individually owned tracts that each owner will be motivated to manage prudently in his or her own interests. Again, though, some resources, such as migratory animals and fish, are impossible to subdivide, and the individual owners may find it hard to exclude intruders. The remaining solution to the tragedy of the commons is for the consumers to recognize their common interests and to design, obey, and enforce prudent harvesting quotas themselves. That is likely to happen only if a whole series of conditions is met. The consumers form a homogeneous group. They have learned to trust and communicate with each other. They expect to share a common future and to pass on the resource to their heirs. They are capable of and permitted to organize and police themselves. And the boundaries of the resource and of its pool of consumers are well defined. Examples of homogeneous groups prudently managing resources that they expect to pass to their children are the Tikopia Islanders and New Guinea Highlanders. Those small groups, along with the Icelanders and the Tokugawa Japanese, were further motivated to reach agreement by their effective isolation. It was obvious to the whole group that they would have to survive just on their resources for the foreseeable future. Clashes of interest involving rational behavior are also prone to arise when the principal consumer has no long-term stake in preserving the resource, but society as a whole does. For example, much commercial harvesting of tropical rainforests today is carried out by international logging companies, which typically take out short-term leases on land in one country, cut down the rainforest on all their leased land, and then move on to the next country. In that way, loggers destroyed most of the lowland forests of the Malay Peninsula, then of Borneo, then of the Solomon Islands and Sumatra, now of the Philippines, and coming up soon of New Guinea, the Amazon, and the Congo Basin. What is good for the loggers is bad for the local people, who lose their source of forest products and suffer consequences of soil erosion and stream sedimentation. It's also bad for the host country as a whole, which loses some of its biodiversity and its foundation for sustainable forestry. A further conflict of interest involving rational behavior arises when the interests of the decision-making elite in power clash with the interests of the rest of society. Especially if the elite can insulate themselves from the consequences of their actions, they are likely to do things that profit themselves, regardless of whether those actions hurt everybody else. Throughout recorded history, actions or inactions by self-absorbed kings, chiefs, and politicians have been a regular cause of societal collapses, including those of the Maya kings, Greenland Norse chiefs, and modern Rwandan politicians discussed in this book. As a result of lust for power, Easter Island chiefs and Maya kings acted so as to accelerate deforestation rather than to prevent it. Their status depended on their putting up bigger statues and monuments than their rivals. Conversely, failures to solve perceived problems because of conflicts of interest between the elite and the masses are much less likely in societies where the elite cannot insulate themselves from the consequences of their actions. New Guinea Highlands big men live in the same type of huts as everyone else, scrounge for firewood and timber in the same places as everyone else, and were thereby highly motivated to solve their society's need for sustainable forestry.